Welcome to Optimize Me Up, the show where we identify and break down the specific skills and traits you need and how to develop them so you can be successful in any area of your life, get the most out of your personal growth, and accomplish your goals. With no time to waste, let's get this show on the road.
Welcome to the very first podcast for Optimize Me Up. This is your host, Kerry Wan, and thank you for taking the time to listen today and investing in your self-improvement. I guess you could say I'm a self-development junkie myself, as I'm constantly thinking about how can I get better in life. And I figure the best way to do that is to find people who are really good at something and just interview them about the exact skills and traits that they developed and how they did it to be successful at whatever they do. And for today's interview, we're having a conversation with Brad Costanzo. It's actually funny because in the podcast, you'll hear him mispronounce his name thanks to the nerves of doing my first podcast. But I think you'll really enjoy the topics we discuss because he's always dropping tons of golden nuggets and filled with great knowledge. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. All right, we are live here with our man, Brad Costanzo. Costanzo, right?
Costanzo, Costanzo, tomato, tomato.
Yes. Brad, amazing. How about that?
There we go.
Awesome, man.
Great to see
Same
you.
Here. Same here. I'm super excited about this because every time I hear your bacon-wrapped business podcast, you know, you talk about how it's scratching your own itch and using it as your selfish way to kind of talk to people that you want to. So I kind of like, you know, Brian has a good idea there. Maybe I'll have him try some of his own medicine and let me hit him up for my podcast here because, Brad, I know you are a business consultant, but I think that's a very vague term because you're a man of many talents. You're quite the Renaissance guy from the time that I've known you and chat with you. And I think most above all, like every time I follow you and see your social media posts, you're definitely an intellect and you're a collector of knowledge.
Is that your way of calling me a nerd?
you're a nerd like that it. Has you always say you're standing on the shoulder of giants, and along the way you've always dropped these like golden nuggets here and there, and I think you'd be like the perfect person to ask about this podcast because what my podcast is about is basically the skills you need to acquire in order to be successful in any particular area of life and then how to develop it, because I think oftentimes it's very vague, like, oh, just be confident. But it's like, how do you actually be confident? What do you actually do? And is confidence really even necessary for the thing that you want to be good at or accomplish? So that's what this whole podcast is about. And
perfect. Well, I love talking about this topic.
Awesome. I'm glad it's up your alley. Because my first question to you is, I guess let's just start with what would you say you consider is your superpower in terms of your skill or trait that you say that, hey, I'm pretty darn good at this thing?
You know, I've spent a lot of time trying to kind of identify this, and I don't know if I've done an amazing job, but I think my superpowers revolve around two things. So one of them is relationships. I'm very good at it. A lot of people like, you know, come and tell me, Brad, you seem to know everybody. You seem to be really connected. Like, what are you doing to meet all these people? And I'm very, I don't want to say unconsciously competent at it, but like, because there are ways that I build relationships with people very intentionally. Like, I've just got this empowering belief that no door is closed to me, that I can get a hold of anybody if I really wanted to. And one of the reasons I do my podcast is to extend my relationships. But I pay attention, number one, to the people I'm talking to, and I really try to ask questions that probe to find, you know, how I could add value to them in the future, right? And that kind of leads me to my other superpower, which I would say is my ability, my memory and ability to integrate things that might be and synthesize, like whether it's information or things that I've heard people say in the past and bring it up and say, all right, I got it. Like I'm able to connect those dots, even if those dots were drawn several years ago. And I say this is a superpower because to some degree, it's not a learned skill. It's just what I do naturally that creates really amazing results. So for instance, but you know, when it comes to learning things, I'm very methodical about the things I read. Like I have a process, the way I read, the way I highlight, the way I synthesize what I learned into like my own personal knowledge management system, basically, which is my notes of what I take. That helps me integrate and remember things that I read. And then when I talk to people, because I really do care and I pay attention, I sometimes remember that. And it could be like 2 years down the road, I'm talking to somebody else. And I was like, you know what? I remember a guy I was talking to. His name is Kerry Wan, and you know, he does this, that, and the other. I should make that connection. So making the connections between not only people, but big ideas and strategies that might be out of the, in people's peripheral vision, to me, I'm able to get them out from peripheral to focus really easy. Those are the superpowers. As I said, that not the stuff that you can just easily learn. You can learn a little bit, but, if I had to place those two things, because you know, with my business, I have done and I do everything from starting my own business, consulting with others. I've done agency and consulting work. I've started e-com brands. I've started service companies. Some have been successful. Some have failed. I'm trying to buy businesses now, and I'm always just trying to do different things. But it's this ability to quickly learn and understand things that allow me to kind of take advantage of that. And then I think the other real superpower is just my attitude of play. Like I look at this as a giant playground. I just jump in and say, well, screw it. Let's see what happens. And I'm not too afraid to fail. But so that's my long-winded soapbox version of my superpowers.
There's a lot of stuff there to digest there. And I took some notes because I want to dive deeper into some of these things. And I guess the first one to start with that's a little uncommon that I don't hear a lot is basically you talked about connecting dots. Mm-hmm. So before we talk about that, like how is that beneficial? So like if you were to sell someone on to like, hey, you know, it's really useful in life if you learn how to connect dots, like why is that even important? Like how does that benefit a person to know how to connect dots?
So you know, connect dots is my little metaphor that can be used in, you know, a lot of different ways. So one of the things can just simply be like dots can be people, dots can be ideas, dots can be strategies that work in one industry and nobody's tried it in another, right? So one example could just be connecting people. If you can connect people and help them get what they want through the connections you make, you can have a lot of success. You can build a lot of amazing relationships. And truthfully, there's very few things I like doing more than making really powerful connections for other people, not even like selflessly. Let's talk about more strategically, like connecting dots is also noticing trends, noticing things that are happening, kind of paying attention and seeing beyond the obvious, which is what I think connecting the dots are, because a lot of people, if you think of a dot, like we're all living on a little dot, think of a dot as like our little bubble, right? We're all living in a bubble. So we're there. And if we're only concentrating on the dot that we're on and we don't zoom out and see the other dots around and find the bridge to connect them, we're going to, you know, continue living in a pretty, you know, stale bubble. In business and consulting, like I may see something that works in one industry, and I've got, maybe it's a client or maybe it's my own business that has never been really tried before. And I'll give you an example here in a second. Mm-hmm. And if you try something that's never been done over here, maybe somebody just never really thought about it and it has tremendous success, you can carve out a whole new industry. The very first digital marketing based product that I ever did, I connected a couple dots. And most of my life, I'd been in financial services and financial advisor. And then at 32, I got laid off and I decided I was going to try something else. I'd read Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week and I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. He talks about information marketing and this whole industry that I never really thought about existing, that if you can find a niche product with a global, now with the internet, you have a global audience, you can probably sell a very, very little niche product. When you expand it out to the rest of the world, you can sell it to a lot of people. I was like, that sounds interesting. I just got laid off a job. I'm going to try this. Now, I had read two books within 6 months of each other, right around this time, that were really influential to the next steps I took. One of them was Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Workweek, and another one was a book by Neil Strauss called The Game, Penetrating the Secret Society of Pickup Artists. And it was all about his exploits, being a total nerd who learned how to pick up girls from friends and coaches online who taught him all these little strategies. It was an entertaining book. I was never really a part of this whole pickup artist seduction scene. Like, this was, you know, I was just a single guy, pretty good with girls. And I noticed that every once in a while, you know, because I knew a couple dozen bar tricks, like how to make a napkin disappear, tear it up and disappear, whatever. I knew like drinking bet winning tricks. And every occasionally, if I ever did this with a girl when I was flirting with her, it oftentimes was well received and it helped the flirtation. In the book, which was a New York Times bestselling book by Neil Strauss, he mentioned using magic tricks in the book, but he never taught which magic tricks. He never revealed them. He just kept on mentioning, oh yeah, and when we'd walk into the club and we'd do these magic tricks and the girls would fall all over us. I was like, you know what? That's interesting. Okay, so there's two dots. Information marketing, niche marketing is a thing. And there's a really popular book teaching guys how to pick up girls, mentioning magic tricks, but not teaching it. So I immediately went out and I Googled. I was like, well, this is cool. I want to know these pickup artist magic tricks. I mean, I was dating my current wife at the time, but I still was curious. So I Googled pickup artist magic tricks. Nothing. Like, you could learn magic tricks if you're a magician, like sponge bunnies and card tricks and all linking rings and all these traditional cheesy magician tricks. But if you really wanted to learn impromptu tricks that didn't look like you were going to be trying too hard, you had to figure it out on your own, trial and error. And I remember thinking, huh, like if a course on how pickup artists and guys, let's just say guys can use magic tricks in bars and clubs to impress women without looking like a cheesy magician existed, I would buy that tomorrow. And then I had this epiphany. I was like, okay, well, if I would buy it, and I immediately read that and Googled it, I'll bet there's some other people out there who did too. So the next thing I did is I validated it. I wrote a quick little sales page for a product that didn't exist. I bought some traffic to it on Google, and I got a little bit of interest in there. And people were like, "Yeah, where is this? I'd buy it." So that became a very successful business. I think my best year was doing $500,000 in sales, and then. I started to do some other stuff, and then I sold that business. But the moral of the story is I took two dots, which was information marketing. Well, actually, maybe three. Information marketing is possible. The pickup artist seduction dating advice tips for guys community is a thing. I didn't even know that until I read that book. And that three, those guys are talking about magic tricks. So I just drew my little triangle. I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to connect these dots. Nobody else has done it yet. And that allowed me to find a gap in the marketplace that I could exploit. All right. So several years later, I did something totally dissimilar, but it's a dot connecting strategy. And these are not like the dot connecting strategies I'm telling you here. Well, that led to a nice business. This next one was just a quick little opportunity. So a friend of mine's wife had published a book on vegetarian recipes. Mm-hmm. She had like 15 sales over the course of a year. That was it, 15. She was nobody and she didn't know how to market the book, but it was a good book. Another friend of mine had a high traffic blog in the health and fitness space. And they decided, it's called Be Well Buzz, right? And they, you know, hundreds of thousands of visitors and newsletter subscribers, et cetera. So I had an idea. I was like, okay, one person has a good asset, but no traffic. One person has a lot of traffic, but they don't have this asset. So I said to my friend who's got the book, whose wife had the book, I said, hey, could I use the information in the book and republish it under a different name? Just like, I don't want to recreate it, but I'll give you 20% of everything I make. And he said, yeah, I don't care. Have at it. And then I went to my friend who had the blog and I said, hey, how would you like to have a best-selling book and not do any work? And I'll pay you 20% of everything it makes. He's like, done. What do you mean? So I took the content from one book and I edited it a little bit. This took me about a week to edit. I added an introduction and an outro. I had somebody design the cover. And then once it was done, I put it on Amazon, and it was called the Be Well Buzz Ultimate Vegetarian Recipe Collection. And I then sent that. I gave the link to my friend who had the big site, and I said, why don't you go promote this now, put it in your email, put it in your, on your blog, et cetera. And he did a big launch campaign around it, because inside it, not only does it help him and his brand, but there's a little link in there that drives people back to his site. Mm-hmm. So it was beneficial for him to promote it. And we were like the number one recipe book on Amazon for like, I don't know, a week at least. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't remember exactly how much revenue this thing did, but it probably did about $20,000, $25,000, something like that over the course of the that year that we did it. It still makes a little bit of money. But the point is, I made 60% of the sale of that. I paid out 20% and 20%, and I had an asset that I still owned. It took me about 2 weeks worth of work. And that's just another example of me connecting dots, me saying, paying attention to what's being done, but then also looking at the space in between, like, and seeing what's not being done. I forget what music composer, or there's a quote about music where it's like, it's the space between the notes where the music is.
Yeah, I heard of that too. Yep.
And it's the space between. So it's what's not there. I try to pay attention to what's not there and exploit to the best that I can that. And that's connecting the dots. Everybody else are making dots. I'm trying to connect them. And as I said, it's a nuanced discussion, but there's a lot of different ways you can kind of go about it.
Yeah. Those are two obviously very successful examples of the application of it. And I don't think a lot of people think about that. So I would probably think that people that don't have this skill are very like kind of stuck maybe myopically in like what they're doing in their problem. So how would you encourage someone to help elevate them and zoom out and kind of be beyond their own bubble? Like, how does one kind of snap out of that and start getting the practice of having the awareness of that kind of? Do you have any recommendations on how one can?
Yeah. So one of my favorite quotes by a guy named Charlie Tremendous Jones. He's passed away, but he was a motivational speaker and big proponent of reading and books. But he has a great quote that I've never forgot, which is, you'll be the same person you are in 5 years as you are today, except for two things: the books you read and the people you meet. And that can be extrapolated out to what you learn and the people you meet is pretty much the same. So learn more and meet more people. Meet people in different circles. If you're a hardcore Republican, meet and greet Democrats, you know, for instance. If you're in one industry, go out and meet people outside of your industry and just broaden your horizons and just get curious. That's really what it is just getting curious. But learn things, learn new things, meet new people, read stuff you've never read, and just open your mind to ideas that you might not ever come across. That's the only way I can really think to kind of broaden that out. And then I guess lastly is just ask better questions. Tony Robbins always says that the quality of your life is determined by the questions you ask. And it couldn't be more true. The questions I like to ask is, my favorite question is, how might we? And there's a lot to unpack there's a little to unpack, but it's really powerful. If I'm trying to accomplish something with myself, a business or a client, a friend, et cetera, I don't say, how do we? I don't say, how should we? How can we? I say, how might we? And I don't know if you notice that there's a slight shift in the energy of that question. If I say, Carrie, you've got a podcast. How do we make it the number one podcast on iTunes? How can we? Does that sound a little intimidating? Like,
piece that you want. Yeah.
Right. But if I said, how might we do it? How might we? Might creates this. It unlocks this part of the brain that says it may or may not happen, but it's imaginary anyway. So let's just play, right? How might we do it? It's like, I'm not saying we're going to, but if we did, how might that happen? So I got this, and I didn't make this up. This is the top phrase that innovation, the top innovation experts in the world use. And it's part of design thinking. And it's just called HMW statements. How might we? How might we do this? Because what it does is it relieves the necessity to it relieves the necessity to have certainty in will it work or will it not? You're like, I don't know. We might call up Joe Rogan and ask him to, because he's like got the number one podcast, yeah, right? We might call up Joe Rogan and find a way to get him to promote us on his podcast. Well, chances are that's not going to happen, but it allows us to play and throw ideas out there. And sometimes like the craziest ideas end up being the best ones. And you never know until you allow yourself to unlock those. And then one of the ways you do that is, this is a process that was, you know, used by Walt Disney himself, not the company so much, but Walter Disney. He realized that in, you know, whenever he's planning something, he either wants to be in the how might we stage, like the dreamer, and he wants to just come up with like what would be cool if it happened, like how might we create this, and the only thing he wouldn't do when he was in that frame of mind is he wouldn't plan out how it's going to happen, and he wouldn't critique it, because he would do that later once he had this really kind of cool idea of how might we create this business to do X, right? Then he would go, okay, given the existing resources and knowledge we have, how do we? So it goes from how might we to how do we, and then you just add stuff to it. You don't add new dream like vision to it, and you still don't critique it, because once you're done with the, you kind of got the idea and then you got the plan, now you go in and critique it with yourself, your team, etc., and you allow yourself to critique it, knowing that the goal of the critic is not to derail it. It's just to make sure you don't get derailed. It's to make sure you're not missing anything. So in the questions, I guess, would be how might we, how do we, and then what about, or, you know, what if, or why not, right? Like those are the questions that they might ask. And they might ask questions like, well, how much is it going to cost? Do we have the capital for that? Well, and they might ask, well, if you've got, you're spending all your time on this initiative, do you actually have time to do this if you think it's going to take X amount of time? And the only rule in that frame of mind is don't try to solve the problem while you're critiquing it. Just collect and then take it back to, okay, let's use the money thing. Okay, we don't have the money for that, but how might we accomplish it anyway? Or how might we get the money? Or how might we do this, right? So it's just segregating out your thinking in ways that are much more productive than simply just trying to brainstorm, you know, without structure. So hopefully that answers the question in a more in depth than you probably expected. No, that's been
fantastic. There's so many great strategies in there, and it's just even such a small tweak could have incredible results. And I think this is also a good time to segue into what you talked about, which is the first component. Before talking about learning, how you said building relationships, meeting different people is a great way to help expand that horizon and connect those dots. So let's kind of break into some of those strategies. I know like you have a podcast. That's one strategy you use to actually meet
the best
people.
That's the best hack.
The best. Yeah. And then like, how exactly do you evolve and build the relationship? I know it might seem natural to you, but I, you know, like what are the practical steps? What are the little, make it like, is it like, oh, I once a week, whenever I think of him or her, I shoot him a text and just ask him how they're doing. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I'll do that sometimes. I'll do that sometimes. Like, I'm actually not at, what I try to do is be extremely present with who I'm talking to. I try to be on their level as much as possible. And this is a nuance that I haven't really talked much about, but I was thinking about it the other day because I was on a podcast and they asked me a similar question. So if I'm talking to somebody who is, and I'm going to use business as a reference, okay? Because business and personal is a little bit different. On their level, if I am talking to somebody who is in a lower socioeconomic status than me, maybe they're, you know, early 20s, just trying to get started in business. Maybe they are, maybe they're my age, but they have no money, right? Maybe they're broke, but that's okay because they're there. They're asking for help, or maybe I just met them, and et cetera. when I say I try to be at their level, what I really mean there in this case is I try not to act like I'm above them. And this is just part of me, I think, just trying to be a good guy. Like, listen, I'm not better than you. I'm not like, I think I can learn something from everybody, and I don't judge people. I'll meet you where you're at. As long as you're in, you know, somebody I am talking to and are not annoying me, I'm not going to think I'm better than you, look down on you, patronize you, et cetera, because I really do think I can learn something from everybody. And if I can't learn something from somebody, they might be able to help me through a connection, right? They may be able to connect a dot that I can't. So I'll just talk to them as if they're like, we're peers. And I know that that makes them feel better because like, wow, Brad's like kind of cool. Like he's, especially if they know that I may be at a higher socioeconomic status than them, I'm not acting like it, right? So that builds really good rapport. At the flip side, I talk to people all the time who are at a much higher socioeconomic status than I am. And what I try to do there is put myself on their level by simply refusing to feel like I'm an inferior, right? Now I can pay respect. I can be respectful and I can be, I think that's the word, but I won't put them on a pedestal and act like, oh my gosh, thank you so much for talking to me. Like, this is super cool. Like, I won't be either a fanboy or whatnot. I'll try to relate to them. Even if I can't relate to them on a business level, I'll try to find some way I can relate to them on a human level, whether it's with humor, whether it's with personal stuff, whether it's with sharing common challenges that I know like everybody has. And by not trying not to be overly impressed by what they're doing while still honoring and respecting who they are. That takes a large degree of self and inner confidence. I luckily have that. I think I've always had that, which allows me to relate to people. Like when I was a kid, I was able to relate to my parents' friends really easily because and even my teachers, I didn't think of them as superiors. I just thought of them as other people and I just kind of wanted to talk to them. So I just acted like I belonged. And I think that's the key is when I'm talking to people who are, you know, have 100 times more money and success, I just kind of act like I belong there talking to you. And, you know, I think it's very obvious to them because when I'm talking to people on the flip side, right, where I have the elevated status, I can tell the people who are just super cool with me and they don't make me feel like I'm on too much of a pedestal or something like that. They're just being humans. Cause mm-hmm. I mean, I'm as far from a celebrity as you can get, but, and nobody really feels like that. So it's like a lot of people feel really uncomfortable when you, what's the word? Prostrate. Is that the word yourself to somebody to where it's like,
I haven't used that like, word. Oh. I haven't heard that word in that context. So that's a new word for me.
But anyway, hopefully that makes sense. But it's like, it's one of those things I haven't really talked a lot about, but it's like, just try to be on the same level with people. Don't try to be better than others and don't feel as though others are better than you in totality. They may be better at you than a skill, but they're not necessarily better at you at life. And like, I don't believe anybody's better than me at life. I've got life figured out. Like, I don't have as much money as I want. I don't have as many toys as I want. I don't have a lot of stuff I want. I'm far from like wealthy by my definition, but I feel like I can have a conversation and talk to anybody at any level. And I think that really plays on at the higher and lower side.
Now you said you kind of developed that or kind of just had it as a kid. Do you think that's because it was just like
parents that love me, maybe? I don't know.
They're just like, here you go, Brad.
Yeah, I had a good childhood, parents who loved me and instilled confidence in me. So for a lot of people, that's hard to do. I mean, I think a lot of people lack self-esteem and confidence, et cetera. I think it's probably one of the bigger problems that humans have, but I'm fortunate that that's not one of my problems. Yeah. And it helps, you know, people, like I've had challenges, like I've had really bad challenges throughout my life, but the way I've bounced back from them and handled them, I think have let me rebound and make it look like a much more charmed life than it was. But, you know, there's this concept of, you know, if I get these things, if I accomplish these goals, if I achieve this, then I'll be happy. And I look at it as like, well, I've always been kind of happy. And maybe that's why I've achieved these things. Like happiness is the cause. It's not the effect. And happiness is also another loaded word, but it's, I mean, the attitude really determines everything. But it's like, I think these good things happen and I'm able to bounce back from the bad things just because I've cultivated an attitude of play and not taking things too seriously. In fact, this is one of the things I want to dovetail on, because I made a post about this on Facebook a few weeks ago, and then I was thinking about doing a podcast on it, but this is the first time I've kind of talked about this side, which is, you know, how seriously should you take life? Like, I've heard a lot of people say, don't take life too serious. You know, that's a cliche that gets thrown around. Like, don't take life too serious. Nobody gets out alive. But what is the appropriate seriousness that you should take life? Right? Like, should you take it really serious, or should you not take it serious at all? Is it a one or a zero? Obviously it's in between. But I think when I really started to meditate on this and think about it, it's take the effort serious, not the outcome. So I can't always control the outcomes. None of us can, right? And in 90% of cases, we can control the effort we put in. If I want to have a healthy, decent shaped body, et cetera, and I don't take my health and fitness seriously, if I decide not to go to the gym, or I go once a week or twice a week, and then I come home and eat a donut, I'm not taking my health and health and fitness serious. That's what I should take serious. And if I am taking that serious, but I'm not getting the results I want, if my body isn't perfect, if I don't have the ripped washboard abs, which I don't have, like all that stuff, like, should I let that determine my happiness? No, because that's an outcome I can influence, but I can't necessarily control. So I just go, well, like, hey, not everybody's, you know, meant to have washboard abs. And I joke with my wife. I'm like, that's, you know, that's what keeps me faithful, honey. Because if I had these washboard abs, I don't know, I'd be beating all the women off. And I joke, but I'm trying to take it less seriously. Yeah. But I still wake up every morning at like 6 a.m. I still go to the gym and I take that seriously. In business, you know, give it your all. Try as much as you can. And sometimes you're going to succeed and sometimes you're going to fail. But don't let the outcome determine your identity. So, you know, so let the input determine your identity.
So you'd say that's kind of like the secret sauce, almost like the skill set that allows you to rebound off of failure, reiterate, keep on going, persistence. I think it sounds like to me a lot of that comes from the core of you don't take the results seriously because you focus on the effort as the serious thing. Does that sound about right?
Right. I'll enjoy the results and I'll expect and I want the results. But if I don't get them, I try to get serious about the efforts. If I'm not getting the results I want, I don't fixate and get really serious, which to me means like, hey, I'm fixating on it, et cetera, on those results. I'm like, okay, I haven't gotten it yet, but maybe I take a look at the inputs, not the outputs. And I go, all right, I was screwing around. On this, I wasn't giving it my all. I'm going to get serious over here on the thing I can control, which is my input. Hey, eventually that output may happen. That output might not happen, but maybe a different output will. Maybe it'll end up pivoting to somewhere else. And I think that's the key. Friendships. I take friendships very seriously, meaning I put a lot of effort into it. I expect a lot. Like if I'm giving a lot to a friend, I expect, I want a lot. I don't always get a lot. Like a lot of times I'll get friends flaking on me or doing something to make me mad or doing something inconsiderate. I've lost friends in the past, just, you know, one reason or another. But I try not to take that too seriously because I know, look, I put the effort in and it might not be me, et cetera, but I feel good about my efforts.
Was there ever, I mean, was it always this way, or was there ever a time where a result output happened and you were infuriated or?
Oh yeah. That's how I used to be. Yeah. Growing up and stuff, I'd get really upset. That's probably why I decided to cognizantly focus on that stuff, because I would get really upset and I would beat myself up. And once more, I would confuse the outcome with the identity. I suck at this. I'm a sucky business person. I suck at running. A great example was when I was in high school and I was on the cross country team and I was a terrible runner. I didn't like it. And I was getting like last place, and on a cross country team, last place, there's dozens and dozens of people on this team. Coming across the finish line last, you get made fun of. And I would just constantly beat myself up. Like, I suck. I'm a terrible athlete. I'm a bad runner. Like, I'm a loser. And I would let those things play, and I would get really upset about it. And I was, you know, but then I look back at the effort I put in, and I was not really practicing. I was not doing all that other work. I was like, well, why? I actually don't have the right to get upset about the outcome because I didn't put the input in. And if I put the right, you know, it's that whole thing. If you give it your all, like, listen, I was serious about it. I did it. Maybe I wasn't serious enough to get the gold medal or first place, but I did good work, and that's something I can be proud of. And I think that's what, if more people just focused on the input, taking that seriously, and then letting the output come where it may, I think that life would be better. In fact, it was funny because when I realized this, I also realized that that's the one of the core tenets of one of the world's major religions, which is Buddhism, mm-hmm. which is that suffering is caused by attachment and desire to outcomes and to results. That's the one thing they left off. Like, attachment and desire are the things that fuel suffering. Well, what are they attaching and desiring? An external event to happen, right? There, or an external thing. They want the result. But the middle path there, and I'm not Buddhist, but I respect the heck out of it. That middle path is just, yeah, do what you can. Take the right actions with the right mindset. And, let the chips fall where they may, because they'll probably fall pretty good if you work on that input.
So it sounds like when you first started, you're attaching I am this negative thing blank because of the result. And then at some point you stopped. Like, how'd you stop? Like, did someone slap you across the face and said this, or you just one day just woke up? Or like,
I don't really remember. I just got sick and tired of being judgmental on myself. Yeah. And I just decided, you know, that one of my core values in life is play and fun.
So now do you see things as almost like a fun game? Like, I'll try this and let's kind of see what happens? Or like, how's that kind of shaped your approach of things or your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, my perspective now is just try the best, you know, put the best I can in and see what happens. Like, I actually, one of the things that it forced me to do is I got rid of all long-term goals, and I only have, I have aspirations, but not goals. And an aspiration is a fuzzy goal, but I have short-term goals. Like, okay, I got to get this thing done by the end of the week, or I got to get this done by the end of the month, something like that. Those are more just like tangible, you know, task-based goals. But yeah, it just made me focus less on what happens and a lot more on, okay, yeah, I know what it takes to get, you know, healthy and fit. I'm just going to go focus on that. Mm-hmm. And one of these days I'll look back and be healthy and fit. Right. So I think that's one of the big ways.
You said, that was very interesting. You talked about like how you dumped goals and now you've adopted aspirations. Can you tell me what the difference is?
Yeah. So a goal would be,
I guess, a SMART goal. Like, you got rid of.
Yeah. SMART goals, yeah. Specific, measurable, right. Time-based, et cetera. And a lot of people will be like, okay, I want to have a business that does $10 million a year. I want to make $1 million net income. I want to have a six-pack abs. I want to work with this company or this person. I want to become this like career or whatever, right? And they're like focused on an outcome. And for me, I could do that, but it was never a real driver. Like, I always knew, like, whatever I was putting out there, I was like fooling myself. Like, I was, you know, for a while there, like even saying, okay, I want to work real hard, make a bunch of money so I can buy an exotic car or something of that nature. I could say that, but I never really wanted it. It was never going to drive me, my daily actions, is having a certain car or having a certain amount of money in the bank or being saying I've got a certain title or whatever, or that my income is X. Because I mean, realistically, and they've done studies on this, like, let's say income, like anything after $250,000 a year, your happiness goes up incrementally, not exponentially, right? Because you can live an amazing life on $250,000 a year, for the most part, depending on the inputs that are going into it, as long as you're not working 100 hours a week. So I went from that to saying, look, I got three aspirations. One is to make, to be fully engaged and really enjoy what I'm doing. If I'm working, if whatever I'm doing, I want to enjoy it. I'm not, even if I could make $1 million a year, if it's at a job I hate, that's not my aspiration, right? So full engagement. Number two is work with and be surrounded by people who inspire me. People that I look up to, people that I want to be around with, right? People I like, love, and are inspired by, people who raise me up. And number three is I want to make really good money. Now, none of those are quantifiable. Like, what is really good money? Is $250 a year good? Is $500 a year good? Is $10 million a year good? Yeah, it's all good. But I can change what good money means, because that good money can also change based on if I am fully engaged in what I'm doing, absolutely loving every minute of it, and I'm making $100,000 a year, which, you know, for some people, that's a lot of money. I might be okay with that, right? As long as those other things are kind of really working out, then I'm okay. And by focusing on the aspirations and less so on the goal, it gives me a little bit more of a compass, and it lets me know when I'm off track to say, look, I don't like the people I'm working with. I don't like my clients, my teammates. I'm not making very good money, and I'm not very well engaged. Okay, something's wrong. Red flag, red flag, red flag. Change this up. So it ends up as a good barometer. I think that's maybe a good example. It's maybe a barometer versus a compass. A compass points you directly where you want to go, and the barometer kind of tells you the air pressure. It's like, it's getting kind of like, you know, the air pressure is a little high or low, and it's more of a feeling than it is a direction. Mm-hmm. So I've never thought about those two things before, barometer versus a compass, but I like it.
See, the brilliance just comes out at you.
See, you're pulling it. You're pulling it out.
Not too hard. That's really interesting. It's like, you know, some people have the goals and it works for them. And I guess you just found for you, the aspirations works for you. So I guess this is a good point to kind of ask about, you know, you, like, if you were to imagine yourself, you know, take a step back, like imagine your life as a movie, and then you step back and you see yourself as the director, or in this case, a video game, what area would you want to kind of level up and power up yourself next?
That area is personally, professionally, both.
Whatever you want to choose. Whatever you want to share.
So professionally, being above my business more and working more on it, being more of a leader. So I think developing leadership is the what I'd like. I've been more of a technician than I should, because I can do a lot of the things that are involved. I end up doing it, and I end up doing work that could be hired out for, you know, a lot less. And that's one of the areas I'd like to just improve myself on, is leadership. The personally, you know, it's hard to say personally, I think, because the leadership thing is really will drive a bunch of the other stuff. I'd say that it's just extracting myself from the daily activity and more off the organizational chart of the businesses that I work with and own.
So what's kind of stopping you now? Like, why are you not in that place yet? Like, what's kind of in the way?
I think it's getting over that desire to remain in control. Mm-hmm. And also because I like the speed of results. In order to be a good leader and to build teams and things like that, that you need to, you know, to accomplish that, it's often like taking two steps back in order to take five steps forward. And I don't like taking two steps back. So I just like to go
backwards. I'll tell you. So what
you're, yeah, I just like to go. I'm like, well, screw it. I know I could do that, but I'm just going to knuckle down and do this myself. And I think I have to get over that. So
yeah,
that's primarily it.
What resources do you think you're going to take? You would take if you were advising a client of yours that had a similar problem of, hey, I want to develop leadership. How would you, or in this case, leadership and being able to be above the business, how would you advise him to go about, you just do da 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 da?
That's a good question. there's a degree of forcing yourself, especially if you have the ability to do it. It's forcing yourself not to, like, being really disciplined and probably starting with small things, small steps. Mm-hmm. You know, let go of the small things that if somebody screws it up, they will. It's less. What do you call it? Less damaging, right? So you can see, okay, wow, I can actually trust these people, et cetera. I also think it is holding, you know, creating boundaries to saying I'm not going to do that, period, and realizing that it's not that doing that, that there's a real opportunity cost. It's like being really, really cognizant of the opportunity cost of doing this, even though you can. The cost is like, well, what is this preventing you from doing, preventing you from thinking of, preventing you from connecting with somebody else and doing the really, really high value tasks, and just being, I think, completely cognizant of the opportunity cost is, that's probably where I'd start on that.
Mm. Awareness of what you're missing mm-hmm. out on. Quantifying it,
yeah, I think
the rest of it, and then, like you said, forcing yourself to kind of give it to someone with a micro test, so they don't, you know, completely blow things up, and they're just screwing up a small little thing that doesn't really count yep. as much. That's kind of like your advice on, hey, this is how to make it work. Does that sound about right?
Yep, it does.
Cool,
it does.
Let's see. Do I have any other questions for you? Man, there's a lot of good stuff here. I took a lot of notes. It's really cool. I appreciate your time on this, because it's a lot of times it's hard to take these practical steps, and you just don't know where to work on, what to do. And sounds like these are some awesome tips that anyone could get started on.
I think so. Hopefully they like it.
Appreciate it. I think that's about wraps it up. So. Is there anything else you'd like to, if people want to like reach out to you or check out some of your resources or learn more about what you do, what are some of your sites and things you got?
Well, the best things. Yeah. I mean, the two best sites to visit are, my podcast is baconwrappedbusiness.com, and it's on all the major podcast networks, and they can come to bradcostanzo.com as well to just kind of find out a little bit more about me personally and the various ventures that I'm involved in. But if anybody has any questions, then feel free to, my personal email is brad@baconwrappedbusiness.com. Feel free to reach out.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Brad.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening today and investing in yourself. Go to optimizemeup.com to get the show notes on this episode and the latest and greatest content to help you grow in the specific area of life that's important to you so that you can accomplish your goals. Now, go make today your best day ever, and we'll talk to you again soon.